Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
You're listening to Escape Adulthood with Kim and Jason. It's November 8th, 2007, and this is show number 25. On today's show, we interview Kristen Van Ogtrap, the editor of Real Simple Magazine, about balancing all the things that come with being a busy editor, mom, wife, pet wrangler, friend, loyal daughter, and enthusiastic sister. We also talk about parade balloons and offer simple ways moms can escape adulthood.
Take me back to when I was a child, when everything was good enough, it was good enough for the wild. Coyote sleeps in the moonlight, rabbit goes by the day, snake winds around on a hot afternoon, and eagle flies on his way. Take me back now if you can. Take me back now to the land where the people sleep in the moonlight, the children run in the daylight, and that feeling never dies, but it may go away for a while.
Welcome to the Escape Adulthood Podcast Show, your number one source for long-lasting, fast-acting, physician-approved adultitis relief. This is Jason. I'm here with my wife, Kim, saying hi from Studio 315 in Madison, Wisconsin. You can get in touch with us by sending an email to podcast@kimandjason.com or give us a call. Leave a message at 608-554-0803.
Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
Yeah.
The day after hump day.
Yes, we're going to our Friday very quickly now.
Yeah, it's going to be busy. We got a trip to Ohio coming up this weekend for speaking engagement, so there's always that scramble of getting things done before
but you
that.
You can't say that B word. Didn't you read my recent
blog? Oh, yeah.
That's a bad word.
That's bad.
We don't say, I don't say that B word anymore.
Well,
it's overused.
It is. But is there a difference between just saying that you're busy and being like, I'm so busy? Like,
that's,
there's a difference.
That's true.
Right?
That like deeper throat busy thing.
Please rain down flowers of sympathy for me because I'm so busy. Now that's
a good
different.
Point.
You know?
Yeah, the schedule's full. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, it is.
It's chilly here in Madison today. We're transitioning into winter.
Yeah, and nothing worse than the end of fall. I love fall, but the end of fall stinks.
Yeah. The coolest thing though about our new office, I have to say, is that it's filled with skylights. And so the natural light, I'm so pumped that one thing about Madison and Wisconsin in the winter is that it is sunny.
Yes.
So that natural light's going to be huge,
That's
I think.
Helpful. And we have an announcement to make about our office a little bit later on. Something cool that's coming up. So stay tuned for that. Right now, it is time to just jump right into the mind bender question.
Okay.
Who was the first, you know, like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, they
have
those floats and those balloons that are so famous. Who was the first character featured as a giant balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade?
Ooh, that's interesting. What year was it?
You haven't seen the answer yet, have you?
No.
Okay, it was
1927. 1927?
So we're going back a ways.
That's pretty advanced.
So SpongeBob SquarePants would be a poor answer.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, I'm going to go with Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse, okay.
Assuming he was a created... although maybe not. Walt Disney only died a few years ago.
Could have been. Could have been back there back in the day, early animation.
I don't know.
That was when Babe Ruth was hitting home runs back in those days, so...
Maybe it was a big Babe Ruth. Baby Ruth bar?
We'll reveal the answer at the end of the show. Well, we got a lot of really good feedback in our last show about Halloween, our Halloween spooktacular. We talked about green Halloween and the idea of giving kids non-candy, healthy type things.
Like toothpaste or
and acorns. Which are always a big hit. Notice
this
the
brought
sarcasm.
In a lot of feedback.
We got a lot of feedback. I wanted to read one email in particular. I had some good things to say. It's from Shirley Jones. She says, hi, guys. I finally got a chance to listen to your podcast. I had to try the Halloween one since I enjoy it so much. As for green Halloween, I must vote no way, man. I say this as a kid who thought people who gave you raisins instead of chocolate were weird beyond compare or just cheap. I love the idea of toys versus candy, though. To me, that is such a sensible solution for parents who want to support a healthy lifestyle on Halloween without ruining the fun for all the kids. Because just like you said, Halloween is all about fun. Don't we want to keep it guilt-free? When I was little, we had a few wonderful neighbors who did really cool things. One lady saved all her change all year and gave us her pennies, nickels, and dimes. Another lady and her husband made haunted houses filled with candy out of milk cartons, like you got in school. Kids looked forward all year to seeing those two. And kids remembered those houses that gave out the best candy and would be extra nice to them even after Halloween was over. Also, why try to instill good eating habits or appreciation of organic food on the one night no kid wants anything to do with veggies and health? It doesn't make sense. I have a niece and nephew who are both diabetic. They plan all week to eat so they can have as much candy as possible on Halloween and the day after. It's because they have to watch their sugar so carefully that they appreciate how they get to be normal and have a piece of candy on Halloween like everyone else. Anyway, that's my two cents. Thanks for a great show. P.S. Kim, I love your voice. It's so bubbly. I can tell you really enjoy life. You must have been a fun kindergarten teacher. Sincerely, Shirley Jones. And if you haven't checked out, Shirley Jones actually was named her blogs as Adultitis Antidotes.
Yes.
Blogs that help people stay more childlike. And her blogs, brightdays.wordpress.com and funspirit.blogspot.com, which we'll have links to those in the show notes. Definitely check those out, because if you like what we're doing, you'll love what she's doing.
Fun and refreshing.
And some really good points there by Shirley, I think.
Thanks for writing that in, Shirley.
Adding, you know, the toys are okay, but it's the one night of the year.
Right.
We're going to try to force healthiness on kids. I'm just not buying it.
And she brings up a good point about her niece and nephew with diabetes, you know? It's like the planning ahead is a very key part of it, so.
Indeed. Now, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback for us, we'd love to hear it. You can send us an email at podcast@kimandjason.com, or you can give us a call at 608-554-0803. That's our Skype number, and it'll allow you to leave a voicemail message that we may play on the show. In the meantime, tell your friends about this show. Email it. Say you've got to listen to this. It's the best podcast in the history of podcasts. I'm just giving you ideas.
These are just suggestions.
And vote for us on Podcast Alley. Helps get the word out. And there's links to all of this stuff in the show notes on our blog.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey. Stand by for news.
Good evening. Here is the news for parents.
I look good. I mean, really good.
Hey, everyone! Come and see how good I look!
Today's article is from New York's Market Watch by Marshall Loeb. 5 ways moms can carve out some me time. Women tend to be such good multitaskers, it can work against them, says Thais Gaines-Reed, an emergency medicine resident, new mom, and author of the book The Get a Life Campaign. This is particularly true of women trying to balance career and family, but it's important not to let your to-do list take over your life. Taking time out to do the things that replenish you isn't an indulgence, says Reed. It's a health precaution. If you sacrifice your own peace of mind in the name of responsibility and run the risk of depleting your resources and falling prey to a variety of stress-related ailments, and this is likely to take a bigger toll on your family than insisting on some downtime. So there are 5 strategies. I'm going to share 3 with you today, and you can check out the rest in the show notes. Number 1, schedule chores. If you know that Wednesday is laundry night, Saturday is shopping day, and Sunday is the day to do the bills, these tasks don't weigh you down during your downtime.
Good one.
Yeah. Another one, plan ahead. Advanced preparation can help mothers steal moments for themselves, says Reed. If you pack school lunches the night before, you can use the early morning to do something for yourself. Reed also recommends packing your bag before you go to bed and choosing a week's worth of outfits in advance so you don't have to think about what you're going to wear. You might even want to set aside some time on the weekends to cook food that can be frozen and reheated throughout the week.
So batching tasks.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Yep. And the next and last tip we're going to share is reclaim lost time. Reed recommends writing down exactly how you spend your time to pinpoint lost moments. Do you waste valuable time every day taking the train to work or waiting in line at the pharmacy? Rather than simply resigning yourself to the way things are, Reed suggests making a conscious choice to use your time for yourself. Listen to your iPod or read a few pages of your book. Remember, every moment counts.
Good tips.
Yeah.
I like that idea of the batching task, doing things. It's amazing how you can save time because it takes so much effort to get your mind into the thought of doing something.
Right.
And I experimented with this with my cartooning stuff, is batching certain tasks and doing them all together saves so much time rather than doing the same thing every day, because you lose that mental prep time of just getting into the flow. And once you're in the flow, you can just whip through things really quickly.
Those transitions do take time, even though they don't feel like they do.
Yeah.
The other thing we've started doing a couple months ago, which has proven to be very helpful, is planning the meals out for the week. Mm-hmm. And we haven't gone as far as cooking on the weekends, because we like to save our weekends for relaxing. But if it relaxes you to cook, then go for it. Mm-hmm. But knowing that Monday night's going to be this, Tuesday night's going to be that, then when you go to the grocery store on Sunday or whatever, you know exactly what you need, and you're not running out later to say, oh, I forgot this. You
takes
know?
The thinking out of it, which is, again, when you have all these things in your head that are just like cluttering and weighing you down, it's a good way to kind of make things a little bit more simple is to take advantage of tips like this.
Definitely. And check out all five. There's two more really great ones that you can check out when you read the whole article. I have been enjoying this awesome blog online called Adventures in Chaos, and it's written by the editor of Real Simple, Kristen Van Agtrop. We are so excited today. We have an interview with Kristen talking about simplicity and busyness and stress and how she deals with it all. So here we go.
By day, Kristen Van Agtrop is the editor of Real Simple magazine, which is a refreshing magazine all about making life easier. It helps readers create a simpler life, home, body, and soul. By night, she's a suburban mom of three kids, wife, pet wrangler, friend, loyal daughter, enthusiastic sister, and owner of a house that is 100 years old and sometimes feels like it's conspiring against her. She also recently started the blog Adventures in Chaos, which is an every woman's look at life in a messy world. The blog is her attempt to wrestle with her love-hate relationship with daily chaos. That is, her attempt in her adult life to recognize that chaos is the name of the game and it's just silly to try to fight it. Kristen, thank you very much for being with us today. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Good. Well, it's our pleasure, definitely. Being the editor of Real Simple, we have so many questions. We're just curious, like, how did you find yourself in this role and what do you enjoy most about your job?
Well, in terms of how I found myself in this role, I joke with friends that I mean, I'm not a person who ever wanted to be an editor-in-chief of a magazine, and it was almost like I was walking down the street and I looked the wrong way and I fell into a hole, and here I am. But if you look at, it took me a while to find my way to magazines, after a few career false starts, but when I finally did, I really liked it immediately and just thought it was, you know, more fun than anything else I had tried. And one thing just kind of led to another in terms of, you know, as I moved my way up the editorial ladder, I guess. And when the company that publishes Real Simple Time Inc. called me about the Real Simple job, it was just a magazine that I really, I worked for a lot of different magazines and connected with them on various levels, but this was the one that I felt, of all the magazines that I read, was really kind of geared for me. So that's sort of how, I guess, And even though I didn't ever have an ambition to be an editor-in-chief, certainly, I just thought, you know what, I might as well try it. Like, I've got nothing to lose by trying.
Right.
And, you know, I'll either fail or I'll ruin the magazine or maybe I'll be good at it. So almost 5 years later, it seems to have worked out okay. And then in terms of what I like about the job, it's just, a lot of it really is the fun factor. I recently went to my alma mater and gave a little speech to, you know, students who are interested in working in magazines, among other people. And my one piece of advice to them, or the piece of advice I kept going back to was look for the thing in your life that's fun. Mm-hmm. Because if you're having fun and you can get paid for it, you know, success will follow. So the greatest things about my job now is that I work with just creative people who are you know, who are funny, and the meetings are interesting, and I don't know, I just feel really, from the minute I walk into the office in the morning to I meet, I'm completely engaged.
That's cool.
Which I could, you know, I couldn't ask for anything better than that, so.
Can you imagine if everyone felt that way about their job?
Wow.
What kind of a world we'd live in? Man, that's how we feel, though.
Yeah.
If you're having fun at it, and you can get paid at it, and money follows, success follows, all that other stuff that everyone worries about, and but I love that. That just look for what you have fun doing.
That passion.
But I think it takes a while to get to that.
Mm.
You know, if I had just taken, I've just been so lucky in my career, and if I had taken, you know, a couple of places along the way, if I had taken like a left turn instead of a right turn,
okay,
you know, I could have done something completely different, and I wouldn't be, you know, having a job that was as much fun. So, I mean, for me, also luck is, I think, just played a huge part. Or serendipity, kind of serendipity,
yeah,
and luck,
yeah,
combined.
That's a good word.
Yeah, that is. Well, talking about, you know, this job that you love, it's like you have a high-profile job that is awesome, a healthy marriage, 3 beautiful kids, a dog, a house in the suburbs. So many people would, you know, from outside look at your life and say, wow, she is living the American dream. What would you say to them?
Well, I mean, I guess I am, you know, it,
yeah.
What would I say to them? I would say, I guess you're right, I am, and I would add a cat. I have a cat, too.
Okay.
My cat, however, is not living the American dream. He came first, and then we had the dog, and then the 3 kids, and my cat just feels like he keeps going down on the ladder of importance with each new additional family member, unfortunately. No, you know, the problem that you're right, and I feel incredibly blessed and incredibly lucky. Unfortunately, I think that a lot of the times I feel too busy to remind myself that.
Okay.
You know, but I do think a lot that someday I will look back on this period of my life when I had a career that I loved and, you know, everything else was sort of firing on all cylinders and everybody was healthy and happy, and I'll look back on this time and say, you had no idea how good it was.
Okay.
You know, like you didn't. So for me, the struggle is, I know it intellectually. I was having this conversation with a friend the other day. Like, you know it, but you don't always feel it.
Right.
You know? So, like, I know that I'm living the American dream, and I know that I'm incredibly lucky. Do I feel it every day? No.
Right.
You know, the prevailing emotions are often, you know, stress and stress.
And more of the same.
I know it in my head. I wish I could feel it more often.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's a key to point out is that, you know, people are trying to get in positions where they feel like, okay, this is, everything is perfect. And it's sometimes important to realize that it doesn't necessarily mean that everything is perfect, that, like you said, you have stress to deal with and busyness. And no matter where you are on the journey, we all sort of need to take time to step back and enjoy where we are, no matter where we are, I think, because, like, it's all part of the journey and the perspective that you get along the way. So,
yeah. Well, and there are trade-offs for everything, you know? Like, when I think about, you know, I often wish I were less busy. You know, I often wish that my days weren't jam-packed with meetings and I had more sort of just quiet time, for lack of a better way to put it. But if I did have that, I would be giving up other things.
Right.
You know, so you have to also just, I try to constantly remind myself about the trade-offs that we all make, you know, and you're right, it's never going to be perfect because one wonderful thing is going to mean that something else is less wonderful, always.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so true. Well, I'm curious, you know, you say you're in these meetings and with these wonderfully fun people that you're working with, and I know just my experience of reading Real Simple, it is so jam-packed with such wonderful stories and tips of how to simplify your life and to better balance all that life brings. So I'm curious how, you know, having all this stuff at your fingertips, share with us some of your own secrets to staying balanced amidst your average day.
This is sort of a tough one. I mean, I have a couple of answers. I guess I'm not sure they're all answers to this question.
Okay.
you know, when I mean, I try to, well, a couple of things. I try to sort of, as Jason was just saying, get a lot of pleasure out of very small things, like getting in bed. When I get in bed at night, it's my best moment of the whole day.
Yeah.
And it never, and it's never not wonderful.
Okay.
So, like, no matter what kind of, what kind of day I've had, I always have that moment to look forward to. Mm-hmm. Like, there are three markers of wonderfulness in my day that are completely, that are always reliable and are always there. Getting in bed at the end of the day, having a cup of coffee in the morning, mm-hmm. and having a glass of wine when I get home from work.
Yeah.
Like, as long as I keep those three things there, like that, no matter what kind of day I've had, those will always make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, in the workplace, one thing that I think helps me manage, you know, both simplify and sort of manage my daily schedule is, when I come into work, and this is one that I think is not answering your question, but it's simplifying for me. I definitely like leave emotion at the door when I walk into work.
Okay.
So a lot of my behavior and decision making and ways I interact with people during the workday are, I just leave kind of my whole kind of emotional life out of it.
Mm.
And that helps me. It's hard to describe, but I think it helps me as a manager of people, and it helps me kind of, you know, get through one meeting after the next where I'm not sort of bogged down by, you know, well, what do I really feel about this person that I'm talking to? And what am I bored in this meeting? Maybe I am bored. Like, as soon as I start going down that path, it gets more complicated.
Right.
You know, so I've just kind of, I click something off when I walk into the workplace a little bit. And then I also, and again, this is sort of an emotional thing, but I'm not much of a worrier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really try hard, not to worry about things that I can't control.
Okay.
Is that a natural, you know, so, have you always been that way, or has it
I think I've kind of always been that way.
Okay.
Oh,
like, if you
great.
Look at me versus my husband, he worries about things like, you know, when we get on a plane, he worries that the plane's going to go down.
Okay.
Like, I don't worry about stuff like that because I can't control whether that's going to happen.
Right.
And it's just a waste of time. I worry about, like, are my kids eating healthy?
Mm-hmm.
Because that I can control.
Right.
You know, so I think not worrying about things I can't control, you know, whether I'm going to lose my job tomorrow, whether my train's going to crash on the way home, whether, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, that takes a whole, that's such a huge time suck, worrying about that kind of stuff.
It is.
So that's, I don't know if that's a satisfying answer to your question, but those are just some of the things that, and a lot of it's emotional and not, you know, about kind of the physical day-to-day life, but that, if I simplify the emotional stuff first, it clears the way for everything else.
Do you feel like a pressure being the editor of Real Simple? Do people, like, assume that, oh, she must have it all together, and
totally, and it's really hilarious.
Because Kim and I deal with that a lot, you know, with, you know, being more childlike and stuff. It's like people are expecting that
we,
you
can
know,
never be stressed, right?
Right, you know. So that's
yeah.
you know, something, you know, you be realistic with, and we try to do the best we can. But how do you deal with that perception? Does it affect you? Do you try to, like, again, is it something you just don't worry about, or?
Oh yeah, no, I don't worry about it. First of all, it's hilarious to me when I'm confronted with it.
Yeah.
You know, like they're just on this new blog, there have been people who, just a couple of comments, not many at all, but people who've read my editor's letter over the years, and they, you know, when I write about something that stresses me out, or just something, you know, that makes me mad, or just illogical, or a place where I've really screwed up
uh-huh.
in my personal life, like a couple of people have written in and said, but you just seem so perfect to me.
word.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just, and at least to one of them, I think my reply was like, ask my family how not perfect I am. You know? So it doesn't, but the other thing too is it gets back to what Real Simple is. You know, mm-hmm. the mission of this magazine is to make, to take the pressure off, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's to say to women, you know, if you look at some of the magazines in our competitive set in particular, it's to say to women, we're not going to, you rarely, for example, see the word should in Real Simple magazine.
Mm.
You know, because what we're trying to do is offer women solutions for ways to kind of streamline or take shortcuts or make complicated things less complicated, but we would never say to them, you have to do it this way.
Right.
The tenor is much more like, you know what, this works for some people, we like this idea, if it works for you, great, if it doesn't, turn the page.
Okay.
You know, and so I think as the editor of the magazine, the expectation is not for me to be perfect, and when I talk to readers in my editor's letter or now on the blog, it's important for me, to me, for them to see that the people behind this magazine, and with me sort of as the figurehead, I guess, are not about perfection. It's really about just finding things that work for you so you can find those moments in your day, and you guys talk about this a lot, those moments in your day that are the things that are going to elevate your experience. You know, the things where you can take, places where you can take a breath and say, this is where I can find meaning in my life.
Yeah, that's huge. That's totally what we're about, is those little things and interjecting them into your day. And we have a friend named Liz, and she has a saying I like to use. It's called, it's not about perfection, it's moving in the right direction. And I think that's always, you know, just get up and just keep going along and keep trying.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's, you talk about, you know, that pedestal, and the thing I'm enjoying so much about your blog, Adventures in Chaos, is it gives you that platform to share your honest and lighthearted look at all the busyness that goes hand in hand with it all. And you do such a great job of just being, you know, just being you, and it really shines through. So what advice would you give to either a career woman who is considering starting a family, or even a woman with a family considering launching a career? What would you say to either of those two types of women?
Well, I would say that marrying the two is absolutely possible.
Okay.
You know, you do have to make sacrifices, and you just need to decide where, you know, every working parent makes sacrifices, and I think any parent who is happy marrying those two worlds, or any person, and this is true for women and men, who are satisfied and at peace with themselves in marrying a work life and a home life or a family life, needs to find the individually tailored sacrifice list. Mm-hmm. You know, so like for me, for example, when my kids were little, I had this thing where I would never let my babysitter take them to get a haircut.
Okay.
Like that was like my thing. I was always going to be at the haircut.
Okay.
Well, now that my kids are 12 and 9, my older kids, I have a baby, but now that the kids are 12 and 9, I realize, you know what, always being there for the haircut is not that important.
Sure.
You know, like, I always want to be there for the Christmas pageant, and mm-hmm. I always want to be there for the first day of school, and I always want to be there for school drop-off every morning. But, like, if I, you know, if my babysitter takes them to get their haircut, no one's suffering.
Right.
So like, you have to find out things that are really important for you. But I go get new shoes.
Okay. Like
for some reason, new shoes trumps haircut in my worldview. I don't know why. So I haven't crossed that line yet, where I still have been the one to get the shoes. So, you know, you have to find out the things that you can give up and the things you can't.
Hmm.
And the other thing is, I do feel like, you know, if you look at your relationship with your employer, and if you look at your relationship with your children, we'll leave spouses out of it for now. You know, as long as you are hardworking and honest and principled and dedicated, you know, you can drop balls. Everybody drops balls. Mm-hmm. You're never going to be perfect, and but as long as you have those things, and your boss sees it, and your children see it, they'll love you anyway. You know, and they will forgive. You know, maybe not the big sins, but they will forgive you dropping balls as you go along because you're only human.
That's a good point.
Yeah, very much so.
That's a very good point.
I like that concept too, that there's sometimes this false belief out there that we can have it all. And I think what's important of what you said is like, no, it's not really realistic to have it all, but that you don't have to have the same things that everyone else has. And being able to come up with that personal list of what do I want, what am I willing to give up, might look completely different from someone else.
And it might evolve.
It's
right.
Fine. Yeah, and that it might evolve as your kids get older or as the career changes and things like that. I think that's a huge point.
That is.
Right. Well, like if you look at, like in my personal life, if you look at sort of my pie chart of time, not just my personal life, but my personal work life, what has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller over the years is female friendships.
Okay.
You know, as my job has gotten more demanding, as I've had more children, you know, as I've remained married, as I've bought a house that needs renovating, like my, all of those sections of my pie on my pie chart have gotten bigger, and female friendships has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller.
Okay.
And do I like that? No. But when I balance that against, you know, am I going to like go out for drinks with girlfriends or be at home with my children? I'd rather be at home with my children.
Right.
You know, so, but for another woman, that might not be the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, female friends, that's something I feel like I can, in this phase of my life, reduce a little bit. And hopefully it, that part of my pie will grow, you know, as my kids get older and leave the house and, you know, and I've got more time for female friendships. But so you do, it's what you said, Jason, you have to sort of shift. It is individually tailored, and it changes as your life changes and the life of your children changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about balance and stress and incorporating fun, and especially as it relates to adultitis, as we call it. And it seems, you know, with technology, we have all this new technology, but it's supposed to make things simpler, but a lot of times it makes us do more, and it's more hectic and busy, and it seems like we just keep getting busier and busier. And so as editor of Real Simple, I'm sure you kind of keep your finger on the pulse and of what trends are happening and what you see happening in the years ahead in regards to simplicity and stress and how Americans are dealing with all this stuff.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts about that. One is I'm not sure technology is our friend in terms of balance.
Amen, sister.
Only when it works, right?
Yeah.
What?
Only when it works.
Only when it works, right. But also, I mean, the fact that I have a BlackBerry is a blessing and a curse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that I can check my email while I'm sitting at the dinner table with my family, which, P.S., I don't, but
as soon as I
open that box, take out that BlackBerry and check an email, it's like I'm gone. If I'm with my family and I say, oh, I'm just going to check this one thing, it's like half an hour later,
right.
You know, I've gotten sucked back in, and it's not good. You know, so I think technology is enabling, and, you know, I mean, a million people have written about this and talked about this, but technology is just enabling us all to work basically around the clock.
Yes.
And not ever separate. Now, that said, someone in the marketing department at Real Simple told me this, gave me this concept that came out of like Yankelovich research or some media research entity, and this, I think, this notion of blending. But this is the new thing.
Hmm.
Have you guys heard of blending?
No.
No.
Okay. I don't know that blending is something that has just kind of arisen as a concept, or maybe it's not even anything that big, but to me it sort of encapsulates what I see happening, certainly in you know, a lot of the people around me, which is what I think I do, which is taking, you know, which is marrying your two worlds of kind of home life and work life and making that marriage sort of seamless.
Hmm.
You know, so I think blending is both kind of good and bad. I mean, blending is what lets me go on the field trip to the Museum of Natural History with my fourth grader. You know, but it also is what has me checking emails from my BlackBerry at 5:30 in the morning.
Right.
I'm sitting at my sofa at home. You know,
mm-hmm.
so it's like it's the good and the bad. So that's sort of one thing that I feel like is very much present in our culture right now. Certainly for working moms and for working dads too. I think it's a little more present for working moms. But in terms of what the future brings, you know, this spring and summer, the people, the more senior people on the editorial team at Real Simple, who are all, I would say, maybe 38 and over, we have spent a lot of our time talking about Gen Y,
okay.
and how they're different from Gen X and how they're different from baby boomers. Now, I'm 43. I was born, I mean, technically, I'm the last year of the baby boom.
Okay.
But I'm probably a little more Gen X, I guess, than I am baby boom.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you look at some of the people on the Real Simple staff, and if you read articles about Gen Y versus Gen X and baby boomers, I really do think that there is a philosophical difference. And I think some of the things are less wonderful, but one thing that I see in people that I work with who are, say, you know, I don't know, 25 and under, is this real necessity to have, you know, to have robust personal lives and to make sure that they work in a place that fulfills them personally, you know, where there is a much more sort of nurturing environment than I think people would have expected 20 years ago. So that, you know, I do wonder how that will shape the American workforce over the next, you know, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
This expectation among people who are younger now that it's not just about coming in and punching the clock and climbing the career ladder, but, you know, it's about creating an environment that is emotionally satisfying. And I think that's new.
Yeah.
We definitely see that with our peers. We're in our young 30s, and, you know, people are wanting jobs that are making a difference. You know, they're not as satisfied, like you said, about punching the clock. They're kind of checking monster.com all the time and saying, oh, you know, I need this certain salary to live the life I want to live, but can I have the other two?
Right. And I think that, I mean, in a way, it creates a funny tension. I think there's a funny tension right now in this moment when, you know, when you're seeing the clash of Gen X and Gen Y, or the clash of baby boomers and Gen Y, who have really different expectations about work and their role in the workplace and how it relates to their home life. And, you know, I do think that in a way, when you look at some of the things that the younger people around me and who work for me expect and want, and as you just described, Kim, it's much more sort of principled in a way.
Right.
You know, it's almost like when you look at baby boomers who were, you know, I mean, typically kind of idealistic in their young, in their teenage years and college years, and then it basically got beaten out of them over time. You know, it's as if the members of Gen Y, the idealism stays, you know, and they say, I do want to make a difference and I don't want to be governed by work. And, you know, and that, I think that's really new for American culture, at least in the time that I've been in the workforce.
It'll definitely be interesting to see how it changes over the years. Like you said, if the aging process and the experiences affect those principles, or if it'll be kind of one of those core things that's always there. But it is fascinating to see the differences, because especially when you go baby boomer to Gen Y, sometimes it's a huge expectation difference of how things are supposed to, quote-unquote, supposed to go.
So many of them are working together. I can only imagine the conflicts that happen around meeting tables.
Oh, it's hilarious. I mean, it's actually not that hilarious. But there's this great article in Fortune magazine this spring, and the title of the article was, "You Raised Them, Now Manage Them."
Oh.
And it's all about Gen Y and how, like, when you're a baby boomer manager dealing with a Gen Y employee, it's just like you are worlds apart in terms of expectations in the workplace and how you view work and how you think management should be. I mean, it's fascinating.
Wow.
But like when you give it practical application, it can be kind of that clash of expectations can be frustrating for both sides.
Right. And for the editors who are managing them, I would imagine too.
Wow. Makes for some interesting meetings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we could certainly talk with you all day, Kristen, but we know we've got to be mindful of time. So we always like to end our conversations with a question that relates back to your childhood. So if you could think back for a few minutes and think about what you wanted to be when you were little, we're always curious to hear, you know, how that correlates with what you're doing today. So what did you want to be when you were, say, you know, 8 years old or around there?
Oh, okay. So 8 years old, I think when I was 8 years old, I wanted to be a mom.
Okay.
You know, as I grew, as I got a little bit older, I really wanted to be a writer, and I wanted to be a doctor. Those are sort of the two kind of professional things I wanted. But when I was as young as eight, I probably just wanted to be a mom. I don't think I thought about it any kind of, you know, out of the house career.
So when you were doing all your make believing and all that stuff, it was all mom centered kind of things. back when you were eight?
You know, I have such a bad memory, though. I don't know that I remember very much at all from when I was eight.
Okay.
I think it was mostly mom-centered. So, I mean, I was like a, you know, I was a very athletic kid, and I always was, you know, from the very beginning, I used to write a lot. So I probably, I mean, writing maybe factored in somewhere, but I don't really, I don't remember much, if anything, from when I was 8 years old. Isn't that terrible? I'm thinking I have, like, the worst case of adultitis.
No.
Is that the worst adultitis if you can't even remember much about your childhood?
Well, it's what's good about it is that the things that you do remember are things that you're actually doing now.
Right.
So that's,
right.
You know, it would be terrible if it was like, oh, I always wanted to be a writer, and then you're in some job that has nothing to do with writing. That would be probably
yeah,
more
that's
serious.
True.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's, you know, sometimes it is hard to remember back
it
all
is.
The details of childhood. And we kind of over-nostalgize it, if that's probably not a word. But you know, it's about taking those pieces of childhood, the spirit of childhood, with us wherever we go. And it sounds like you do a great job of that, of being able to really balance the family and you're living your dream of something that you really enjoy doing. And such a great role model, and we really thank you for taking the time to share some of your honest struggles and some of your tips and the things you've learned along the way. We really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you guys reaching out to me, and keep up the good work with your all of your stuff, and I really do. I mean, I've been getting a lot of chuckles from your blog, so keep
awesome.
It up.
Thank you, Kristen. You have yourself a great day.
You too.
Take
Goodbye.
Care.
Bye.
Well, I thought she offered a lot of really good insight and practical just wisdom from
yes.
how to manage the busyness that comes from being a mom and a career person and all the things that she is. It's like the point I really pulled out was the idea that to pretend like we can do it all and have it all is ridiculous.
Right.
But you have the freedom to kind of create your own life with your own list of priorities and what things are more important in. And the sooner that you can do that and not feel upset because you're not able to do everything, the better off you're going to be.
Right.
And take things a little bit more simply.
No matter what your life is balancing, and, you know, not even just excluding or, you know, going just to moms, just whatever you're balancing, whether you're a college student or career person or whatever, it's like there are so many things pulling for your time. That priority list is huge.
Yeah. So definitely be sure to read Kristen's blog, Adventures in Chaos. We have the link in the show notes. Whether you're a mom or not, you'll enjoy it.
Yes.
It's just real fun, candid ideas and reflections on life.
Today, one of these lucky contestants will win his or her weight in fish right here on
Wheel of Fish.
Oh, goody, goody. I've done a good thing, and I get a prize.
Well, we have a winner from last month's promotion. We asked the question of what was your favorite Halloween costume, and the one we liked the best was written by Jamie Lynn, and she says, when I was about 10 or 11 years old, one year I was a picnic for Halloween.
A picnic?
A picnic. My mom and I made it together. We took a tablecloth and cut a hole in the middle so I could wear it like a poncho. We hot glued and stapled all kinds of picnic items to it, like empty Capri Sun juice packs, empty Oscar Mayer packages, plastic forks and knives, napkins and plastic plates. It rained that entire Halloween day, but I got a lot of great comments on the costume, and I think I even won some small award for most creative at our town's local Halloween shindig. I didn't let the rain bother me one bit. I put on my raincoat underneath and trekked out into the storm, splashing in the puddles the whole way, all the while making jokes about how it was raining on my picnic. I'm so glad you guys posted this entry and it made me remember this. I think it's time for a Remember That Time When call to my mom. So, Jamie, thanks for that post. You can see why we picked that one, because that was pretty creative. And we'll be sending out Jamie a gift certificate for $20 at the Lemonade Stand, where we have added over 100 new products. So there's all kinds of stuff. It's going to be hard for Jamie to decide what to pick out. But we will pass it on to her. And we're we'll do this again this month, right?
Yes.
Okay. What do we got?
We have a promotion this month. The same question we asked Kristen, what did you want to be when you grew up? Now, we've done this in the past, but I cannot tell you how insightful this question is and how much, you know, it really does help you kind of search as to what you're doing today. So call us or send us an email and let us know, what did you want to be when you grew up? And you might just have a chance to win your own $20 gift certificate.
Sweet.
Welcome to KimandJason.com.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation is Mr. Know-It-All.
K&J updates. We have some really cool things going on, and one of the neatest things I think that I'm excited about is this ebook that we have out on our blog called The 79 Ways for Busy Moms to Escape Adulthood. Mm-hmm. And it is a free download and just filled with graphics and fun ideas from real moms who shared ideas with us, you know, last summer during a promotion that we had. And I cannot tell you, I had the privilege of editing it and picking the 79. It was so hard. We had way more than 79. And so they are the best of the best. If you are stressed or busy or know someone who is, and they happen to be a mom, and honestly, I think it's for people who aren't moms too. I'm not a mom and I love it, but you need to check out this ebook. Like I said, it's free download and it's a lot of fun.
And it's not just one of those junky ebooks that's just text.
No.
You know, we know an artist. And
he does a comic strip called Kim and Jason.
He contributed some artwork that helps spruce it up a little bit. So
yeah.
It's kind of, you know, you get a little chuckle out of the comics and the artwork too. So
yeah, check it out.
The other thing we talked about, we teased at the beginning of the show about our office.
What's going on?
For those of you who are in the Midwest, I guess, although if you're really a big fan anywhere in the world.
We've got an airport here.
We are opening up the office for 12 days in December. Sort of an open house where it's going to be available for people to come and shop. We'll have all of our stuff on display that we sell at the lemonade stand.
Yep.
Full board retail experience. And it is going to be open for 12 days, and we're calling it the 12 Days of Wishmas.
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 Did you mispronounce that?
No, I did not, because here, thank you for segueing that for me. We are teaming up with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and who we are big supporters with, and if you bring in a gift, a toy, for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, you can pick something, an ornament off our tree, which will give you perhaps, I don't know, maybe a free cookie cutter or free greeting cards or something like that, free gift wrapping. And we're also going to be donating a portion of our sales in December to the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Yes.
Meanwhile, we're also going to have other cool stuff going on. Every day there's going to be a different activity, which some of the things you've been working on already.
Yes, my kindergarten teacher hat got to be pulled and dusted off a little bit. And so we're going to be decorating cookies and having some gourmet hot chocolate and just a new activity every day, something fun.
Making
when's the
ornaments.
Last time? Yeah, when's the last time you folded a piece of paper and made a paper snowflake?
Years.
Well,
yeah.
It'll be coming up. You get a chance to. We're going to hang them in our windows and just bring back some of that nostalgic fun that happens around the holidays that we're often too busy to do.
So this is going to be a retail shopping experience like you've never experienced before. And we don't have the details all filled out yet, but we'll be posting that on our blog shortly. So if anyone is near Madison, we invite you to come. And like I said, if you are really a big fan and want to fly from, you know, the UK
to help make a wish,
we're not going to turn you around. So more on that to follow.
There it is. The holy grail of Christmas gifts, the Red Ryder 200-shot range model air rifle.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
That is so cool.
Cool.
Oh, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
For our cool thing section of our show, I have to say that this would make a great Christmas present for moi. Hint, hint. I have it in my hands right now, and I'm just like
you?
Hugging it. Yeah. Moi.
You're the reason we have this in our store.
I know. I basically, talking all this talk today with Kristen and our article about busyness and the balance of it all, especially for moms, the cool thing is a bathtub caddy. And what it is, it's silver. It's like a
chrome.
And it's a caddy that you put across your bathtub while you're laying in it that holds a wine glass. It holds a candle. It holds your book. And it's so cool because it actually holds the pages open of the book. And so you can sit and relax, have that glass of wine that Kristen was talking about, light that candle, and enjoy a bath like no other. Because I don't know about you. Well, you don't take baths, but women love baths, and guys do too. You're just strange. But this is a way to take your bath experience to a whole new level of, you know, that indulgence that... those sacred times that Kristen talked about that you need to bring and make them solid in your day.
It goes along. We also have sushi soap.
Soap
that looks like sushi that we just added to, and it's like exactly looks exactly like sushi.
Yeah.
But everything is made of soap, including the seaweed binder thing. So
awesome.
Not to add another cool thing, but we have so many cool things that are now on the store. We only pick stuff that we personally want to have.
So we must have big shopping lists.
We're excited about all the stuff. But yeah, the bathtub caddy, that'll be in the show notes. Check it out. All right, now the mind bender question we asked at the beginning of the show was, who was the first character featured as a giant balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade?
I think I'm totally wrong.
You thought it was maybe Mickey Mouse.
I think that in the 1920s, Walt Disney was probably just being born.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I really don't.
I don't have time to get online.
Numbers in front of me right here, but
so you think it might be?
I think it could have been a good guess.
Okay,
it was a good guess. The actual the answer is Felix the Cat.
Ah.
The large balloons first appeared in Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in 1927. And Felix the Cat was the first character featured. Hmm. For a short time, there was a tradition of releasing the balloons when the parade was over. They'd float for days,
and the lucky finders
could claim a prize.
Whoa.
Can you imagine, like, a giant Woody Woodpecker landing on your house and being like... Although, like...
That could be freaky.
Finder. Like, is that a good word to describe? Like, did you really find it? It's sort of like...
It envelops you.
It just kind of fell on top of your car as you were driving, you know?
Okay, good point, though. Like, in the 1920s, not everyone had TVs. I mean, TVs were just probably coming to be.
So, yeah, if they had no idea what was going on, and suddenly Felix the Cat lands in your backyard, you're like, hello? I think they should do that, though. I think that would be fun to see. All of those.
Speaking of Green Halloween, you can't even release a balloon these days.
That's an environmental no-no. But the people are finding them and they're returning them. You know, it's like you get a reward.
How many birds are going to suffocate in the meantime, though?
I don't. Why do we have to worry about all this stuff all the time?
We don't. Too much.
So there's your answer. Felix the Cat was
interesting.
The first one.
What's up, Doc? Now, this won't hurt a bit.
All right, we have a prescription for you, and it is this. Whether you're a mom, a dad, a grandparent, a single person, a college student, or a circus performer, I don't care. Whatever you are, we've talked a lot about moms today, but a lot of this stuff applies to everybody that's breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Make a commitment that today or tomorrow, and I throw in tomorrow because in case you're listening to this like late at night,
okay,
wherever you are. In the next day or two, make a commitment that you will carve out half hour just for you.
Okay.
Maybe it's just reading a book. Maybe it's looking up at the stars. Maybe it's taking a bath or eating some chocolate and drinking some wine. Do that. And as we've learned from the article we shared, that it's not an indulgence. I think
no.
a lot of people think, they don't want to put themselves first.
This. Yeah.
It is a health issue, okay? If you do this, you and the people you love will be better off for it. So take that time. Like Kristen said, you know, that those little rituals of having her coffee or slipping into bed and just relishing that,
mm-hmm.
those moments are things that you need to take advantage of. So make that time for yourself. Maybe a half hour if you can swing it. Go for it. That's your prescription, guaranteed to help you fend off adultitis.
Well, that's it for today's show. Be sure to check out escapeadulthood.com for today's show notes featuring links to some of the things we talked about here today. For Jason, this is Kim signing off from Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks for listening, and remember, it's never too late to have a second childhood.
It's a little childish and stupid, but then so is high school.